UK government might have shut down?
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News One Now with Roland Martin.
Good morning, I'm Roland Martin, broadcasting live from Los Angeles as we prepare for the NAACP Image Awards. Folks, we're still covering news all across the country. Massive protests nationwide this weekend as President Donald Trump screws things up with his refugee ban, leaving folks stranded at airports across the country. Some folks sent back to their home countries. Lots of dissent, protests. Lawyers have been at the airports since early Saturday morning dealing with this issue of this refugee ban. We will talk about it, how it has led to a massive mess across America. Also, the woman who accused Emmett Till of actually assaulting her, she now says she lied. We will talk with a member of Emmett Till's family, including one of the men who went to Mississippi with Emmett Till, who was in the bedroom right next to him when he was kidnapped and later lynched. On the show, folks, we'll be dealing with talking to legendary artist Lenny Williams. Of course, you saw him on TV1's Unsung. We'll be talking to him as well. Plus, civil rights groups, they are standing up to Senator Jeff Sessions, doing all they can to keep him from becoming the next Attorney General of the United States. Big win for Serena Williams as she breaks the record when it comes to the most Grand Slam titles in an open era. Plus, big time winners of African Americans at the Screen Actors Guild Award. We've got all of that for you. It's time to bring the funk from LA. News One Now on TV One. Let's go. Thousands of people across America protested this weekend after President Donald Trump signed an executive order banning refugees from seven largely Muslim countries. Folks, it was a chaotic scene from Los Angeles to D.C. to Chicago to Boston, you name it, as people took to the streets, packing airports, protesting this ban that he says is not a Muslim ban, but the reality is that is exactly what it is and exactly what he called for. And of course, when you look at what is taking place, this backlash, folks, has been absolutely tremendous. The nations impacted include Sudan, Somalia, Libya, Iran, Iraq, Yemen, and Syria. Passport holders cannot travel to the U.S. for 3 months while refugees fleeing Syria are indefinitely banned. Folks, the backlash against the order was swift. On late Saturday, two judges issued an emergency stay against Trump's order, temporarily allowing people who arrived here with a valid visa to remain. It also protects refugees from being deported back to their home countries. The White House says it's a small price to pay for American security.
So it wasn't chaos. I mean, the fact of the matter is 325,000 people from foreign countries came into the United States yesterday, and 109 people were detained for further questioning. Most of those people were moved out. We've got a couple dozen more that remain, and I would suspect as long as they're not awful people that they will move through before another half a day today. And perhaps some of these people should be detained further, and if they're folks that shouldn't be in this country, they're going to be detained. And so apologize for nothing here.
Well, but actually it was chaotic as we saw lawyers literally flooding airports, sitting on the floor, some having to buy tickets just to gain admittance to airports, doing their best to help folks who are stranded, many of them who are elderly, who are also sick. The American with Civil Liberties Union, as well as various Democrats, say this is unconstitutional and they're going to fight it tooth and nail. All right, then. So, folks, we don't have that soundbite. Now, Senator Chuck Schumer out of New York, he stood with some refugees in New York decrying this particular executive order. And again, it has led to all sorts of chaos. Now, what is stunning, according to the New York Times and others, and that is the Department of Homeland Security wasn't even aware of this executive order before it was signed. They literally were on a conference call as General Kelly, the head of Department of Human Services, was flying back from Florida. They were on a conference call to get details when someone said, "Oh my God, they're on television signing the exact executive order we're talking about on this call." So although the Trump administration said everything ran smoothly, that is simply a flat out lie. That is not the case. Let's break it down right now with our panel, Lauren Victoria Burke, NBC Black, Politics365.com. Also, Christian Clark with the Lawyers Committee there as well. Eugene Craig, of course, Republican strategist. Christian, I want to start with you. Utterly stunning when you look at what happened this weekend and how brain dead as Reince Priebus, the chief of staff and others, to suggest that things ran smoothly this weekend.
Oh, everything that we saw this weekend makes clear that that's not the case. First of all, it does not appear that the federal government abided by its own rulemaking procedures when it put out the executive order. There is very little guidance to help aid the public, to aid Border Patrol officials working at airports into how this order was to be implemented. And so what we saw this weekend was pure chaos, complete lack of clarity about how this impacts people who were in transit, how it impacted people who literally were on the ground at the time the order was announced. We saw lawyers out at airports setting up clinical shops to interact with people who were impacted by the executive order. I spent the entire weekend on the phone with lawyers strategizing. Five courts now have issued orders of some kind against the executive order. About three judges have issued orders that say that people cannot be removed. One judge has issued an order saying that people can come in. I expect that in the weeks ahead, we will see more and more legal challenges, and the courts will prove to be a really critical place to put a check on this president's unlawful actions.
Eugene Craig, I saw Sean Spicer, White House press secretary, over the weekend on one of the Sunday morning shows, that he said that, well, one of the reasons why they gave no heads up to the various individuals is because they did not want people to try to somehow slide in as they were trying to get it all sorted. But to have the secretary of the Department of Homeland Security not be aware of this executive order, well, they were actually on a conference call as he was flying back getting the details. DHS, over the weekend, clueless what's going on. Then when the judge order comes down, you had some border security folks who were ignoring the order. You even had Congressman Bobby Scott. Hopefully we have that video of him at Dulles talking to a security guard, a police officer, who would not let a member of Congress talk to folks with border security. I don't care what they're talking about. This was chaos.
Absolute chaos. This is the Steve Bannon amateur hour. Look, I come from Justin Amash being in the Republican Party. There are going to be some places where I agree with the Trump administration. There will be some places where I disagree with the Trump administration. This is one of those places. This executive order is absolutely unconstitutional. It's a violation of rights of folk that are legal residents, folk that hold green cards, even some folk that are American citizens that are flying back in. It's just sad. But this is the Steve Bannon amateur hour on display.
Lauren, to sit here and say on one hand, if you held a green card, you were being detained. Now, all of a sudden, they said, well, there was no problem. Then they said, well, we're actually going to go back. And now, well, we're not quite sure. Who knows what in the world Steve Bannon and Steve Miller is doing in the White House? I mean, to have Steve Bannon literally overrule lawyers with the Department of Homeland Security, I mean, this is just chaos. It's a mess, and it shows that this administration is not even remotely ready for prime time.
Well, when you're running an administration on ideology and not specific policy, this is what you get. When you have a president that doesn't know anything about how to run the federal government and his son-in-law who knows nothing about running the federal government and his friends from who are bloggers like Steve Bannon and Stephen Miller, this is the result you get. And somebody who's worked in the federal government for 4 years, there's a reason there's a sign-off process. There's a sign-off process in congressional offices of only 18 people, where you have two or three people look at something. In this case, obviously, the Department of Homeland Security should have looked at it, the Justice Department should have looked at it, and the White House counsel should have looked at it. We're finding that nobody looked at it. We're finding that members of Congress, obviously with jurisdiction on this matter, knew nothing about this until it came out on CNN. So, I mean, you know, the idea that this White House is, you know, is somehow running, you know, a normal functioning government is ridiculous. It should be of no surprise to anybody. This is what Donald Trump talked about. He talked about a Muslim ban during the campaign. They were stupid enough to put it on their website. They were stupid enough to have Rudy Giuliani be part of the process. And then he announces that that's exactly what they wanted to do on Fox. I mean, so they're not even smart within being stupid. So it's not surprising. We're going to have more to come this week, unfortunately. And the bigger question, I think, is what is the opposition going to do about it?
Christian, speaking of the opposition, we're seeing thousands of people turn out, putting all kinds of pressure on the administration. This is the second consecutive weekend. It's stunning that for us to say that Trump has only been in the White House about 10 days, and they've already managed to tick off women, tick off folks who are in support of various refugees. And I think what is more shameful and despicable from this administration is to see individuals who put their lives on the line to assist the U.S. military who are being held up and denied entry into this country. In fact, one person had to be placed on a plane, flown back to Iran, was kicking and screaming. Now a judge has ruled that person should be able to come back to the United States. And so I don't understand how this administration can somehow explain that, well, everything just went wonderfully and smoothly, when what we're seeing are absolute denials of people who have the right to come to this country. And what's even more so amazing, Christian, is that of the seven countries they cited, there has not been a single refugee who has attacked the United States. Kellyanne Conway goes on television talking about the San Bernardino shooting. They were from Pakistan. They're not on the list. The 9/11 hijackers, most of them from Saudi Arabia, that country's not on the list. What the hell is going on?
That's right. I mean, it's incredibly irrational how this thing was put together. And it's not just the process, that there was no process that went into putting this thing together. It is just as you say, that of the seven nations identified, no one from any of those countries has committed an act of terrorism on American soil since 1975. Completely irrational. I think that we're going to continue to see the protests whenever the federal government does something that tramples on the rights of Americans. This executive order goes against everything that we stand for as a nation. We are a nation of immigrants. We embrace people who have been pushed out and are vulnerable, who come here from other countries in search of opportunity. It will take years to undo the damage that was caused from this moment. And I'll note this. This weekend, a mosque went up in flames in Texas. Last night, there were at least five people killed at a mosque in Quebec City. I mean, we've unleashed a storm of terror around the country. It will take a long time to kind of pull back and undo the damage created by this moment.
Eugene, to sit here and watch this, it is stunning when you look at that mosque going up in Austin, Texas. Now you have the shooting in Quebec as well, at a mosque there as well. And then you people say, well, you know, Trump said he was going to do this, which is absolutely true. But to see the level of chaos and to see border security ignore a federal judge, and some reports say the White House, they told them to ignore a federal judge.
You know, those officers, those border security folk that ignored the federal orders from the judges should be fired. You know, we have three co-equal branches of government. And, you know, it was set up like that for a reason, for situations just like this. You know, I was a person that called out the Obama administration for out-of-control executive orders and out-of-control actions. And, you know, this is a prime example of the same thing that happened on President Obama. You know, it's an out-of-control executive order. You know, Christian's right. The damage that was done from this weekend is going to take literally years to repair. I mean, you know, part of fighting the war on terror is not creating new terrorists with propaganda from our own actions. I mean, you know, this is it's sad. It's absolutely sad.
And there's absolutely no indication that this White House is going to learn from a mistake and change what they're doing. There's this attitude of, you know, we know everything about everything. We're going to continue what we're doing. So I have a feeling that it'll get worse before it gets better. When we see members of Congress, I mean, Don Beyer, Bobby Scott, Jerry Connolly at Dulles Airport, and a constitutional lawyer, Jamie Raskin, say that this is a constitutional crisis, that, in fact, they got a no answer from border security at the airport. They got really no answer. And, of course, there's also this issue, too, of people not being able to get to an attorney who were at the airport. That's a serious matter. So we you know, we have a government right now run by, you know, five idiots at the White House standing in the Oval Office. That's what this is. They're not even smart enough to pick up the phone and call a member of Congress that's on their side to give them some advice. They're not even smart enough for that.
All right, folks, hold tight 1 second. I got to go to a break right now. When we come back, we'll talk about Senator Jeff Sessions' protest against him, trying to keep him from being the next attorney general. Also, next, we'll talk about the case of Emmett Till, where the white woman who accused him of verbally assaulting her and coming after her physically has now said she lied. We will talk with a member of Emmett Till's family, one of his cousins, who was with him that night in Mississippi when he was kidnapped from the bedroom and later lynched. Also, later on News One Now, we'll talk with Lenny Williams, recently profiled on TV One's Unsung, about what he's up to. Folks, we got a packed show for you. Stay right there. This is News One Now on TV One.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
TV One primetime special here in Los Angeles. And so it will air the week of the NAACP Image Awards. So that's why we're here. But Tom, we're still top of the news. Over the weekend, we got some stunning information where the woman who accused Emmett Till of accosting her, physically trying to go after her, she now has recanted, saying she lied. She's 82 years old, and a book author unveiled this and found out 10 years ago, so we're trying to figure out why in the world he's actually revealing it now. It is a stunning story, and so certainly wanted to get the thoughts of the family. And so right now we want to talk to Erica. Erica Gordon. Erica, are you there?
I'm here. Good morning.
And we also, is Wheeler there?
Yes, I'm here.
And so, Eric, I want to start with you. You are, of course, with the foundation, maybe Till Mobley's niece as well. How is your family, what has the last 72 hours, 48 hours, 72 hours been like for you to hear this woman come forward and say, I lied, Emmett Till did not do what I said in court that he did?
We weren't surprised because we've always known the truth. My cousin Wheeler and my cousin Simeon, they were there. So they told us the truth. So we've always known that the woman lied. So that wasn't surprising to us. What was surprising was to hear that she came out and said that she lied. So that didn't surprise us. We didn't have the wow factor so much as the public. But what has angered the family more so than anything is that this author, Timothy Tyson, he received this information and withheld it from the Department of Justice and our family for 10 years. And in 10 years, people have died whose lives were severely impacted, such as Willie Reed. He was a witness on the stand in 1955. He fled from Mississippi, moved to Chicago, changed his whole identity and name, and hid all his life. He just died 2 years ago. that information could have impacted his life tremendously. Mm-hmm. You know, there are people who needed to hear that information that never had an opportunity to hear that information. But we thought that it's a marketing strategy that Mr. Tyson held on to that because his book is coming out. So he waited until he was ready to release his book to make a profit off my family's
Black History Month.
Yes. And
Wheeler Parker Jr.
That has angered us more than anything.
Well, here's the question I got, Rhonda.
Wheeler?
She obviously perjured herself, and I don't care if she's 82 years old or not. Shouldn't she go to jail?
Tom, I said the exact same thing over the weekend on social media, where I said that absolutely she should be charged with perjury, no doubt, because she lied on the witness stand. Now, whether or not they do that, we'll find out from the prosecutors. Wheeler, I have to ask you. You were in the bedroom. You were not in. There were two bedrooms. Simeon Wright was there in the bedroom with Emmett. You were in the other bedroom. Just for our, we've heard the story, but certainly for you as somebody who was with Emmett on that day, you also were with him at the store earlier, correct?
Yes.
What actually happened at that store?
At the store, when we arrived at the store, I went into the store, and I was purchasing some things. And while I was in the store, Emmett came into the store. And I left Emmett there, and Simeon came right in behind me. Nothing happened at all while we were there in the store, not at all. He never said anything to her. He couldn't touch her because she's behind a counter, which is about 3 to 4 feet wide. So you can't reach over and touch a person.
This was their store. This was Bryant's. Is that correct? The store you all went into? And the woman who's now recanting her story was the wife of the owner, right?
Exactly.
And no conversation.
She said Emmett went after her, tried to physically assault her.
That's not true at all. And for over 60 years, Emmett has been put in a bad light. And it's been so painful for 60 years, they made it seem like he got what he deserved. There is due process. Even her husband, when he shot him, he said, I had to shoot him because he said, I'm as good as you. But over 60 years, that has haunted me, has hurt me tremendously. So to hear that she admit lying, it put him in a different light.
You also, again, it has to be painful to be in the house, in the room next to him. You were awakened by him being kidnapped.
Oh, it was pure terror, sir. Heard the whole bed shaking. Mm. It was pure terror. Nothing like it.
Can you forgive this woman?
Oh, yes, I have to. I'm a preacher. I mean, we were raised strictly in a Christian family. And his mother forgave them. She took a lemon and she made lemonade. So that's what we raised with. We can't afford to hate. Hate destroys a hater.
Do you think she should go to jail for perjury?
Well, she lied. I don't know how that goes, but the case is still open. If they found out any kind of way that she was involved, she's liable to go to jail. Sure.
And what about the historian? Because he said that the historians think different than journalists as a part of releasing the information. Has there been any initiation of conversation with him?
No. We don't know what the ulterior motive is. At first, I didn't give that a thought. And I don't know if it's for monetary reasons or what, but more has to come out yet. I understand that she has memoirs that will be open later.
Hmm.
Well, let me be perfectly clear. I don't believe any of us or anyone should buy that memoir. She should not profit off of this. And if she does sell this book, she should not get a dime, and that money should go to the Emmett Till Foundation and to the family because her lie led to his lynching.
Yeah, there should be no profit from this for her.
All right.
Erica Wheeler, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Wow.
Unbelievably sad. Folks, next on News One Now, Senator Jeff Sessions, he goes before a vote. The question is, will he be denied to be the next attorney general? Civil rights organizations are geared up to oppose his possible confirmation as the next attorney general. That's next on News One Now on TV One.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
The Senate Judiciary Committee will vote tomorrow on the nomination of Senator Jeff Sessions to be the next U.S. Attorney General. Of course, the vote by committee to send Sessions' nomination to the full Senate was postponed last week after protest by the NAACP and others, as well as the massive anti-Trump, anti-Republican Women's March. Now, in just a few hours, the civil rights and religious faith leaders will hold a rally on the steps of the U.S. Supreme Court to say they want to prevent Jeff Sessions from becoming the next Attorney General of the United States. Now, as the rally takes place in D.C., NAACP President Cornell Brooks and five other members of the organization will appear before a judge in Mobile, Alabama, to answer misdemeanor charges stemming from their arrest earlier this month, protesting Sessions' nomination as Attorney General at the senator's Mobile office. After their court appearance, Brooks and others will lead an anti-Sessions rally in Mobile. Join me from D.C., Wade Henderson, President and CEO of the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights. Christian Clark with the Lawyers Committee is still with us as well as Lawn Victoria Burke. And joining us as well is Attorney Monique Presley, who's also with the National Bar Association, and they let their feelings be known as well about Sessions. Wade, I will start with you. Will Democrats have the nerve to vote against one of their own? We have seen some tough questioning, but frankly, we haven't seen a lot of momentum of Democrats in the Senate raising a ruckus over Sessions' nomination. Pretty much all of Trump's nominees seem to be sailing through.
Well, let me say, Roland, you're absolutely right about the need to have Democrats raise their voices. But this is one instance where collegiality will not be trumped by the substance of the nominee himself. Religious leaders and civil rights leaders will be on the Supreme Court steps this morning calling on Senator Chuck Grassley, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, to postpone tomorrow's vote and to, in fact, impanel another hearing examining Senator Sessions' role in the creation of the executive orders that President Trump signed on Friday. You know, the one issue that links the executive order banning refugees, the executive order talking about a rewrite of the Security Council, a National Security Council, and the proposed threat to go after so-called issues of voting fraud, the one link that ties all of them together is the role that Senator Sessions has played in the past. He has been a very staunch critic of the refugee program. He has attacked immigrants as representing a threat to our national security. Neither of those, in fact, in the way that he has framed them, have been true. And this effort to sabotage the democracy of our country by claiming a massive voter fraud in the last election is clearly and patently absurd. And so what we are seeing here is an effort to subvert American democracy as we know it, but the common link that makes all of that possible is the role that Senator Sessions has played. So we are asking the Senate Judiciary Committee to postpone tomorrow's vote, and we'll have to see what happens.
Christian, to sit here and continue to listen to supporters of Senator Sessions assert that he has some stellar civil rights record is simply an abomination.
11 years ago today, Coretta Scott King died, January 30th, 2006. Her legacy looms heavy over this moment. When Jeff Sessions was last up for a nomination for a federal judgeship, she wrote a powerful and scathing 9-page letter urging the Senate to reject Jeff Sessions' nomination because of the vote fraud prosecutions that he pursued in Alabama that had a chilling effect on black voters and led nowhere. all of his investigations resulted in acquittals, but left a bitter and stinging legacy on black voters in rural parts of Alabama. I want us to take a moment to heed the words of Coretta Scott King. A bipartisan coalition of senators voted down his nomination back then, and I think that senators should have the courage to listen to her words and look at this unbroken record that has demonstrated consistent opposition on civil rights, not back in 1986, but every day up through this moment. He supported the Muslim ban in 2015. He is somebody who has shown that he can carry out this president's so-called executive order on vote fraud in the past. We need a champion of civil rights in the Justice Department right now. If there's anything that the last 10 days has shown us in this nation, is that we need somebody who will be a fierce leader, who will push back on efforts to unlawfully abuse executive power, and who will champion the rights of minority and vulnerable communities in our country.
Monique and Lauren.
You know what? If there's more than 40 Democrats that vote for Jeff Sessions tomorrow, the Democratic Party has a lot to explain, because so far they've done absolutely nothing. The activists are way ahead of this party right now. I don't care if anybody served with Jeff Sessions for 20 years or whatever. None of that matters. The same Stephen Miller that wrote this ridiculous executive order worked for Jeff Sessions and was writing ridiculous press releases in his late 20s on the Hill for years. And if you can't recognize the link between stupid and bad policy and vote against it on the Senate floor, I don't care if Chuck Schumer is crying at press conferences or whatever, he's got to come up with a plan of action against this administration. And it has to start with this nominee. There are four other nominees that are going to come up that they should be all voting against in the Democratic Party in the Senate. But this is the first one. And so if we get more than 40 people, then I want to see some advocacy against these members, because I'm not seeing any strategy from the Democrats. And this to me is the first fight that they need to at least try to win.
Right. I totally agree with everything everyone else has said. Look, this is why we have separation of powers. This is why we are a government that has checks and balances. The Trump train is a runaway. It's time to check this president and balance this madness. Who can do that? Congress, specifically the Senate. Right. So it has to start now. It has to start with this nominee, but then it has to push forward from there. There is a way that a clear message can be sent from the legislative branch to the executive branch, the same way the courts are sending a message from the judicial branch to the executive branch. The message is, no, you won't. They can try to do whatever they want to do down there on Pennsylvania Avenue, but they do have others to answer for. I agree with Lauren. Look, the people in the streets are doing it right now, but we need the people right behind us at the Capitol to do what their constituents are telling them to do. The mandate right now is in the streets, and we need Congress to follow that mandate.
You know, Roland, the events.
Wade, what will happen today? Wade, are we going to see civil rights groups? Are they going to drop hundreds or thousands of people on Capitol Hill going door to door? What is the strategy, the plan of action to put pressure on Congress not to confirm Senator Jeff Sessions?
Well, as Monique and Lauren have said, there's already been a mass mobilization of progressives and average Americans all across the country weighing in with their members of Congress not to move forward on the Sessions nomination. But recognize that the events of this past Friday were not known when Sessions' nomination was actually set for a vote today. His role in the Muslim ban, his role in the attack on refugees and refugee protection, and his role in encouraging President Trump to look at voter fraud as a massive problem when there is absolutely no concrete evidence to support that, raises new questions about the kind of role he will play as Attorney General. We're demanding that the Senate Judiciary Committee have a second hearing to examine these issues before the committee and the entire Senate votes. And we're insisting that our Democratic allies like Senator Schumer, like Senator Feinstein, who is the ranking member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, weigh in. Now, let me make another point. Look, the Democrats don't have the votes on committee and don't have the votes in the Senate to necessarily stop the nomination of Jeff Sessions unless they go outside of the regular order. And what that means is that they've got to be willing to stand up, speak loudly, and make an affirmative case about why moving forward on this nomination represents a threat to our Constitution and to democracy as we know it. And that's what we're asking them to do. And if they do that, then we think we have a shot at actually stopping the nomination.
We know that they do not have the votes. Yeah, everyone knows that.
Yes.
But they have some procedural things that they have not been using, okay, that they've been ignoring this entire time to fight back and at least make an effort to make the statement that we're against something.
Absolutely.
They've done absolutely nothing. The activism is in the streets. It has not caught up with the Senate floor. We're not seeing anything on the Senate floor. Yep. And Chuck Schumer is in office in large part because of African-American votes. So if we want, you know, we don't have to include the Muslim ban in this. Yeah. We know who Jeff Sessions is. Yeah. Everybody knows who Jeff Sessions is. So what are they waiting for is the question.
Yeah.
Eugene?
Yes, sir. You know, as a small government conservative libertarian, I have some real issues with the Sessions nomination. But, you know, the political reality of it is that he's probably going to be confirmed. So I think looking forward, one thing that we do have Jeff Sessions on a record of saying during his confirmation hearing is that, you know, whatever the law is that Congress produces, he will uphold it. So I think, you know, moving forward, you know, after this guy's confirmed.
You believe that?
Well, you know what? I put it this way. You know, I believe in federalism, and I think if he doesn't uphold the law, then he should be held accountable.
Law is he going to be upholding?
Right.
That's what's critically important. The people in the street need to understand that this nominee is critically important to. I'm wearing my safety pin today. Look, they're safe with me, but are they safe with Sessions? I doubt it. Seriously, it's no accident that the top tier of the Justice Department was wiped out, and then this executive order came out.
Right.
Now we've got court battles all over the country, and Sessions is going to come in, and he's going to put in his own people, and those people are going to be responsible for telling Justice Department lawyers to go in and fight things that, frankly, we all know they don't want to fight. This is a policy that goes directly against everything the Justice Department has been trying to do for the past 8, 16, 24 years. So this is the nomination where Congress can take a stand.
And already we are seeing evidence that the Justice Department is turning the clock back on civil rights enforcement. They moved to delay hearings in the case involving a challenge to the Texas voter ID law. They moved to delay a case involving the newly minted consent decree that would put the Baltimore Police Department on a path to reform. Mr. Sessions is the wrong man for this job. Our democracy is broken. A constitutional crisis is looming. We need someone in there who is going to restore order, be a check on the president, and most importantly, champion the rights of vulnerable Americans across our country.
And Roland, Lauren is
right
that the Democrats do have some procedural cards that they can play that will delay the vote on Sessions and allow more time to build an ironclad record of his intent on violating certain rules and procedures that we know are established. We need to make that happen. I would also say to you that later this week, we're expecting a nomination for the U.S. Supreme Court from President Trump. Now, that will be used both to advance
his point. It could happen today.
Well, one of the reasons it could happen today is because he's using it as a way of distracting from the events of this past weekend. But obviously, those of us who work the issues of Senator Sessions as well as the Supreme Court know that this is not something that we should welcome. And we're going to have to walk and chew gum simultaneously. It's possible to evaluate the Supreme Court as well as oppose Senator Sessions aggressively.
Really quickly, Roland.
We'll leave it right there. Christian Clark, I got to leave it right there. Christian Clark, we appreciate it. Thank you so very much. Wade Henderson, thanks a bunch as well. When we come back, trying to get you healthy and fit and motivated. We'll do so in our Fit Live Win segment. We'll also hear from Lenny Williams, recently featured on TV1's Unsung, about what his new music is. Is he still begging? All of that next, News One Now on TV1.
So you want the truth. Well, we got it.
That's how I talk. God knows it. I'm just straight.
It's News One Now with Roland Martin.
All right, folks, I'm broadcasting here from L.A., where all you see are folks, are fitness freaks out here running around, jogging, doing all kind of stuff. pass. But how do you stay committed to a fitness goal? Well, our guest, Deanna Jefferson, says it's not that hard for you to do. She joins us in studio in D.C. I'm here in L.A. So Deanna, let's talk about that. All right, so for the next 8 days, I'm on the road.
Okay.
And that means, like, here, that means, of course, it's right now, it is 4:46 a.m.
Okay.
That means that it's a lot earlier. You're eating, you're traveling, you're in airports. Mm-hmm. And so how do you stay committed and focused when it comes to your fitness and your nutrition goals?
Right, so the first thing is making sure that you're doing what you like to do. So if you don't necessarily like to run on the treadmill, if you despise running on the treadmill, then don't run on the treadmill. If you like dancing, then try like something like a Zumba class. And making sure that when you're traveling, you can bring some things with you so that you can do a workout right in your hotel room. So things like resistance bands, things like jump ropes, like small dumbbells that you can take with you when you travel.
But that's the fitness part, but the nutrition part is also the hardest. And so, like, yesterday I stopped by a store and I'm going, okay, you know what? Okay, don't get chips. Go ahead and get the green apples.
Right.
Stuff like that. And so is it a matter of also planning ahead before you even get on that plane?
Definitely. So nutrition is about 80% of the game. And so making sure that when you're traveling, you're making healthy choices is going to be super important to your fitness habits. And so you can practically go anywhere and choose a healthier option. So here in front of me, I actually have a meal prep that my fiance, Chef J.R. Robinson, has prepared. And it's basically chicken breast, and it's herb roasted broccoli and peppers and onions. Can you guys see this over here? Yeah, so just making sure that you're choosing healthier options is going to be really key. And making sure that when you're choosing your healthy options, it's also something that you enjoy. So sustainability is really important in your fitness habits. And so if you're eating things that you don't necessarily like just because it's healthy, then it's not going to be sustainable for you. So if you like chicken, find different ways to prepare your chicken so that it's something that you enjoy. If you don't like to eat fish, don't eat fish. Making sure that you're really choosing things that you enjoy so that it's stick-withable.
So I know this. So basically the pizza my producer, Susan Henry ordered last night really screwed up the entire crew here. Thank you, Susan. We appreciate that.
moderation. So pizza in moderation is completely fine.
Yeah, but it was two large pizzas.
Okay.
All right, Monique, I think you have a question.
I do have a question. I noticed you kept saying do things you like,
right.
Eat things you like. Mm-hmm. What about the people, especially in communities of color, who have been raised in neighborhoods where you can't find healthy food choices and have also been raised with diets that don't trend toward healthy options? How do you start working toward liking things other than white bread, processed sugar, and things
right.
like that in your foods, you know, all the foods from like the center of the store instead of the perimeter.
Right. So the thing is kind of taking steps towards, so it's all about progress and not necessarily perfection. So if you like to eat, if you don't like brown rice and you like white rice, you can start off by mixing, doing half white rice, half brown rice until you can kind of acquire the taste for the brown rice and you can actually switch over to brown rice. So it's not taking a complete jump into a completely healthy lifestyle, but kind of making progress towards a healthy your lifestyle.
And how do you do that with the exercise? People who can't stand it.
Yeah, so with the exercise, you take it slow. I mean, everybody can walk. Everybody has friends that they like. So if you want to go for a walk with your friend, a friend that you love having conversations with, then that's a great start. And then you kind of build up from there. We're going to go for a walk first, and then we're going to take it to a jog, and then we're going to join an exercise class together.
Okay.
Well, Deanna, I'm going to need you to really work on Lauren because every time we have fitness meetings, Lauren absolutely does not participate at all.
Lauren, don't
So would you need help?
I find it.
So we need you to help her as well. Deanna, I gotta go to break. Deanna, how can we get more information to reach you?
Yeah, so I have a meal prep service. So you can reach me at info@culinarycrunches.com if you're in the D.C., Maryland, Virginia area, and you can get your healthy meals prepared.
Cool. Yes. Well, I'll hit you up. That's also part of my problem, being so busy when you're moving, not have the healthy meals. So
exactly.
We'll see how that goes.
All right.
All right, folks. Deanna, thanks a lot. We come back. SAG Awards, African Americans, big winners. Also, Serena beats her sister in the Australian Open. But also, we'll talk with Lenny Williams, the beggar, the chief beggar. Next, News 1 Now, TV 1.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
Folks, y'all to see us out here in L.A., so I got Susan Herring, my executive producer, arguing with Henry Peterson over here over who actually ordered the pizza last night. Both of y'all are at fault for that, screwing up diet plans. All right, y'all. He is, of course, a legendary singer. Many of you know his hit song. He, of course, he was just featured on TV1's Unsung. He is Lenny Williams, and he is in the house. Lenny, how you doing, brother?
I am doing good. I'm up and at 'em.
Well, man, I hate that I'm in L.A. and you're there in D.C. We're shooting a primetime special in advance of the Image Awards airing next week, and so I got a little work to do here. So, but I got to ask you, surely your phone has been blowing up since you won Unsung.
Most definitely. Folks have been calling me, telling me, I didn't know this about you, I didn't know that. But overall, everybody really liked it. I said I was glad that that when they did the Unsung segment on me, that I wasn't broke, I wasn't on drugs, and I wasn't in jail. And I'm not in jail, right, yes,
Well, that is a hard part with Unsung, because it's always that, oh my Lord, they died and came back to life and everything like that. But it also gave people a fuller understanding of you as well as your career.
Most definitely, yeah. They hit all the salient points of my life and my career, the ups and downs of me being in the music business. And so I think in a way it kind of helps young people who are involved, who are getting started in music, to realize that it's, you know, a lot of times things are cyclical. You know, you're up and then you're down, and you need to save your money so that when those times come that you're able to, you know, to continue. And so what I did when I was younger, I read a lot of biographies and autobiographies of famous people, and I realized that Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr., people like that, that they had great periods of success, and then they had periods when it wasn't happening so much. Yeah.
Well, Lenny, your song is "'Cause I Love You." Do you ever get tired of singing it? I mean, is there ever one point where you're like, man, I got to sing this song one more time?
No. I never get tired of singing it. And, you know, it's really interesting. That song never was a single. And so it was, you know, kind of astonishing that that would be, you know, the song that I'm so closely identified with. But I never get tired of singing it. And, yeah, because the song has been so good to me, put all my kids through college, you know, help pay the house off, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, so it's getting my wife's hair done every week. So, you know, it's been a blessing to me, most definitely, yeah.
Okay, so before we were in the break, Henry said, because, you know, he believes that he's a musicologist, he said that "'Cause I Love You" really wasn't a begging song. So How is it that you are identified as the chief beggar?
Well, I guess that's the label that people put on me, and so I accept it. You know, in this music business, if you recognize whatever you recognize for, if it's a positive, then just go with it. So I've never actually identified myself as a beggar, but if people say that about me, I accept it. Yes, yes.
I think Eugene has a question.
Okay. So I guess, you know, after the Unsung, and I guess you're back in the studio now, I'm assuming.
Yes.
What new projects do you have coming down the pipeline?
Well, I'm always working on new music, you know, just trying to hang out with, you know, the youngsters and see what they got going on. Mm-hmm. And so working on a new song right now called She Said Oh, you know, because everybody asked me about the woman I was singing to, mm-hmm. you know, and what did she say? So I said, oh, she said oh. Yeah, right. So doing that right now. Yeah, yeah.
That's great.
And, you know, just trying to hang out with young people. Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. See what's going on. Yeah.
I haven't had Lenny sing at my next breakup.
I got a song for you. Yes, I do. Yes, right. Yes, right. Yes.
And trust me, he got more breakups than you have songs.
Well, that means that he's active, right? Yes, right. Yes, right. Yes, yes.
Well, Lenny, it's always good to see you. We surely appreciate you doing what you do. Again, I hate that I could not be there in D.C., but it's only one of me, so I got to put in the work out here in L.A.
Well, hey, we're grateful for what you do, and we appreciate you having us here today, and just keep on doing what you're doing. Yeah.
All right. I appreciate it. Thanks a bunch. Lenny Williams, thanks for joining us on TV One's News One Now. Folks, going to a break. When we come back, birthdays in history, Serena Williams, and also the SAG Awards. All that, News One Now, TV One, back in 60 seconds.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Folks, Serena Williams officially in the record book. She won her 23rd Grand Slam title, beating her sister Venus early morning on Saturday to win the Australian Open. Talk about amazing. She surpasses Steffi Graf in terms of open-era wins. She also ties Margaret Court. And so her next Grand Slam title, she could actually break that record. Last night, folks, the 23rd annual Screen Actors Guild Award took place. Lots of winners. Viola Davis, the most nominated black one ever at the SAG Awards, she won, as well as the actor Mr. Ali in Moonlight won. Taraji Henson and the cast of Hidden Figures, they also won as well. It was a tremendous night for African Americans there. And so tomorrow on the show, we'll have some of those speeches. Also, Denzel Washington scored a Best Actor Award as well. Folks, tomorrow right here at News One Now, we will have more on Senator Jeff Sessions, a protest against him, as well as the latest live from the Trump administration. I got to go from L.A. Holla!
Your centerpiece for black thoughts in America.
I don't bend, I don't break.
It's News One Now with Roland Martin.